Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone in the franchise world. My name is Paul Segretto, and this is Franchise Today. My co-host Stan Friedman is not with us today. He's attending and sponsoring one of the platinum sponsors at the IFA's Emerging Brands Conference in sunny Miami, Florida. I send my well wishes to Stan and everybody attending, and certainly safe travels on the way back. And of course, somber note this week and all that's going on in the world, and especially Paris, and right before that, Beirut and Kenya and some other hot spots in the world. Really a tragedy, and my heart goes out. And I just would like to read something that I saw online with the hashtag Unite Humanity. It says, "We divided, we fall. Stand up against horror by uniting for humanity. Injustice and terror has no religion, race, or national identity. The only way to fight hate is to spread love. Peace starts with you. In the wake of dark times and honor those who have lost their lives, let's unite as a global community and share acts of kindness. No matter how small, all acts of kindness could help. Share yours using the hashtag Unite Humanity." Really a tragedy. Tragic time in the world, and hopefully it'll clear up some as we move forward. On another note, getting to show information today, you know, last week Stan and I talked about McDonald's and how McDonald's was moving in the direction of less corporate stores and more franchise stores, and it seems like this is starting to become a trend in the Wall Street Journal. Jamba Juice posted profits amid focus on franchising, obviously getting away from some of their company-owned stores, and it seems to be the trend. And, of course, as we talk about sustainable and sensible franchising, we'll be keeping an eye on that. Certainly seems to be the trend right now on the food service side. It'll be interesting to see if it continues and also if it moves over to the non-food service side. Interesting news this week that I found on entrepreneur.com and also Forbes magazine. Brian Scudamore, the founder of 1-800-GOT-DRUNK, had an interesting article in Forbes, "Millennials Sneer at Franchising and Here's Why They Shouldn't." And then there was another article in Entrepreneur magazine by David Nilsen from Guidant, who says, "Forget retirement, baby boomers are looking to franchising to stay active." It's really interesting that we're starting to get away from transitioning executives as being the catch-all for franchise candidates. And certainly baby boomers and millennials are definitely going to fuel franchising into the future. Interesting fact, you know, baby boomers for the longest time consisted of the largest segment of the population. Quickly, it was Generation X for 3 short years, and now millennials make up the majority of the population. So it'll be interesting to see, especially home-based and lower capital investment franchises, certainly will be a hot spot for millennials. And, of course, financing will play into it, which is why, in my opinion, and I believe Stan believes in the same, is that we're going to start seeing some of the baby boomers and millennials partnering up together. It's a great combination of capital and drive and passion and experience. So hopefully that's going to be the case. And again, as we talk more about sustainable and sensible franchising, we'll be looking at franchise candidates in the future, millennials, seniors, and of course the growing minorities. And I really think that a big part of that is probably what's fueling or thing that's fueling some of this unrest are, you know, so many millennials being unemployed and underemployed and basically having a lot of idle time and looking for a better way of life certainly starts to take notice on some of the things going on in the world. And hopefully they have sense enough to look at things that are progressive and productive as opposed to some of the information being shared by some of these radical groups. You know, this week is Global Entrepreneurship Week. it's really an interesting time when you look at the entrepreneurial opportunities that are ahead of us. 2 weeks ago, we had Jennifer Cushell, who's the driving force behind the Next Gen Franchising Initiative, really helping entrepreneurs the worldwide get involved in franchising and explore entrepreneurship. And I believe it's 170 different countries right now that are participating in Global Entrepreneurship Week. Yesterday was National Entrepreneurs Day. And there's an interesting push. Of course, that was done through a proclamation by President Obama earlier in the year. And there's an interesting site that, you know, talks about taking National Entrepreneurs Day to a more official day. And it goes on to say, we're a country made of entrepreneurs, men and women who built something from nothing, created jobs, made America what it is today. Our present was built by them. Unfortunately, first time in 35 years, fewer newer businesses are being born than are dying. And even though 43% of all kids in 5th through 12th grade say they want to be an entrepreneur someday, only 7% said they had an experience, meaning a mentor, an internship, or job to help them get there. Isn't it time we honor our entrepreneurs and help aspiring entrepreneurs succeed? So there's a House Bill 511. And if you're interested in reading about it, you know, please contact me and I'll happy to send you the link to it. But basically, it's to name National Entrepreneurs Day, get it through Congress, and become an official day in addition to it being a proclamation by the president. So, again, this is really important. We need to really bring entrepreneurs front and center. We're going to talk a little bit about that today with Shelley Sun, our guest, who was the IFA 2009 Entrepreneur Year winner. But I also wanted to talk real quick about, you know, tomorrow, which is Women's Entrepreneurship Day. And Dina Dwyer-Owens, definitely a supporter of the show, of the Franchise Today Show, and one of our previous guests, as well as others from the Dwyer Group. She'll be speaking at Harvard for the Women's Entrepreneurship Day. And, of course, she's author of the book Values, Inc., which we've talked about earlier this year. And the event is in partnership with the UN and the U.S. State Department and is part of a global movement to empower women in business. My hat's off to Dina. Great effort in all that she's been doing. Before we get to our guest, I do want to jump into You Just Don't Make This Up. It's a segment Stan and I started a couple of months ago, and it just seems to be these ridiculous things that pop up. We talked about the guy that was selling In-N-Out Burger franchises in the Mideast and accumulated over $4.5 million worth of franchise fees. And of course, he's on his way to prison because he wasn't doing so with the approval of In-N-Out Burgers. And as we know, all too well, In-N-Out Burgers is not a franchise. But today, we found in the paper, Papa John's franchise owner sentenced to jail time for wage theft. And I think, you know, it's these type of circumstances and individuals taking advantage of what they believe is a system that really puts franchising in a bad light. And we'll be talking today with Shelley about the recent NLRB ruling. And it's these type of things that, you know, just, you know, cause issues and throw more wood on the fire. And of course, my heart goes out to all the reputable Papa John's franchisees that are out there that unfortunately will be affected by this incident. And of course, it doesn't apply to Papa John's as a corporation, but simply the Bronx restaurants that this gentleman owned. Basically, it's unclear what started this. I'd like to say that it's probably more greed than anything, and hopefully he'll be doing his due time. So enough of that. I don't like dwelling upon the negative, but it's something we need to discuss. So, student, teacher, and advocate, a bright star shines in franchising, is our topic today. Begin your discovery and become a student of franchising while you are following the path to launching and growing your franchise system. And these were powerful words by Shelley Sun from her book, Grow Smart, Risk Less. And it's much more than advice for others, because they're words that Shelley continues to live by, as she truly has become a student of franchising, and yes, now a teacher and an advocate. And the success of her brand, Bright Star Care, is evidence of her commitment to sustainable and sensible franchising. Shelley, welcome back to Franchise Today.
Thanks so much, Paul. Pleasure to be with you.
And Shelley is mobile today, having received an award just a few minutes ago. Shelley, why don't you tell us about that? And certainly I appreciate you taking the time and the effort being mobile. I know it's much easier to be sitting in an office and doing the show, but still you stayed the course, and I appreciate that. Tell us a little bit about the award.
Thanks, Paul. We actually are at the Joint Commission headquarters, where my team and I just had the honor of receiving the Joint Commission's Enterprise Champion of Quality Award for the third year in a row, making us the only home care company in the country to have that designation, and our brand being committed to having the accreditation that is the same accreditation that the country's best hospitals go for, achieve, and maintain. And so our franchisees are doing great work and making sure we're operating at the highest standards, because we're taking care of moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas, and making sure we're following the highest protocols and standards gives great care. And so this is one of my highlights of awards that we've gotten. The awards for being an entrepreneur or growing a business are not nearly as meaningful as being recognized for the quality and the continuous improvement that matters. And what got us started in the business is all about helping families, and to be recognized for that was a huge honor.
Well, certainly a big honor, and congratulations to you and your team, not only for the award, but for continuing to set the standard in your industry segment. And just recently, you launched a new national TV campaign. If you would, tell us about that, because it really does have a unique message.
Thank you. We started national TV advertising in May of 2014, just trying to get the brand out there and recognized. But what we really identified is that the message didn't clearly show what our differentiation was. And much like the award we received today from Joint Commission, we wanted to have Joint Commission kind of front and center. The fact that we have a registered nurse in every single office overseeing the start of care and continuing to monitor care on an ongoing basis, we wanted those clinical standards and our commitment to quality to really give confidence to families in selecting Bright Star to care for their loved ones. And I think that message was able to get communicated in our second TV commercial that we filmed in August and went live on air on a national TV campaign the week of September the 12th, after bringing on a very seasoned and experienced chief marketing officer. Steve Schildwachter joined us mid-July. And so this was his first TV production, really took it up to a whole new level, having Steve on the team.
Well, that's really great. I saw the commercial several times, actually saw it in a couple of different markets. So it's definitely out there and definitely widespread. And my best wishes for a lot of success based upon this. But more importantly, giving people the opportunity to truly understand what Bright Star is all about is really something that I think will resonate loud and clear with many for years to come. You know, Shelley, I know you're extremely active in the IFA. I have your bio in front of me, and I won't share everything from it, because it's hard to believe that this is literally all for one person. I don't know where you find the time for running such a strong, continuing, growing brand, which I know is at a very high level when it comes to, you know, training, support, detail, and everything goes with it. But just real quick, you're a certified franchise executive. You participate in the IFA board of directors. The board of directors obviously takes a lot of your time, and you're going to be the chairperson of the IFA board in 2017. This year, you're holding the position of treasurer of the IFA. Your accolades precede you. I mean, they're tremendous. IFA Entrepreneur of the Year Award, and plus many awards for Bright Star, first place in the June 24, 2014 Forbes list, top 10 on the June 2015 Forbes list for franchises under 150. And it goes on. And, of course, today you talk about the Enterprise Champion Quality Award. How do you keep up with it? I mean, on top of it, you're a married woman. You have twins at home that are school age. How do you keep up with it? Please share. And I'm especially asking you this question because tomorrow is Women's Entrepreneurship Day, and I think you really epitomize a woman entrepreneur.
Oh, thanks, Paul. I mean, I think for me, it's about building a great team, being willing to invest in exceptional talent, and then empowering them with the vision that I have for the brand and what we should be able to achieve, and then letting them develop the day-to-day plans and tactics to achieve that vision. So, you know, from a day-to-day perspective, I serve as CEO of the organization, but I'm really our kind of chief culture officer, our brand advocate, and our strategist. So I work on our strategy for what we are going to accomplish in the next 2 to 10 years. And I work with franchisees in new owner training and doing strategic planning sessions for them on an annual basis to help them work on, not in their business, which is something I'm really passionate about and I believe is really important. But then I have an amazing president and chief operating officer, Tom Gilday, who's been with me for 3.5 years, and he handles all the day-to-day. So that really frees me up to have bandwidth for, you know, probably 10 to 20 hours per week of advocacy. I was just in D.C. on Monday. I'm probably in D.C. once or twice per month. So I'm very active politically, kind of behind the scenes, and making sure we're working for legislation that's beneficial to small business and trying to fight for that. I try to be the face of the brand and being out on media and involved wherever I can. And I mentor a lot. I probably have, you know, 20 active mentees at any one point in time that are emerging franchisors that I'm helping get to the next stage. And then I'm helping them mentor the next up and coming franchisors that are coming up, and we're kind of continuing to pay that forward, much like, you know, Lane Fisher and Brad Fishman and all the people who mentored me back in the early stages. They mentored me, and now I'm trying to pay that forward. I think it's a great thing about franchising. So I think for me, it's about having the right team so that I free up capacity to try to balance being a great mother, you know, being a wife, being an entrepreneur, and giving back to the industry and being active politically. And, you know, I give myself permission that it might not balance out on a daily basis, but over the course of a month, I would have been able to deliver the quality time and results in all of those areas. Just on a day-to-day basis, I think it's impossible to be superwoman and do it all. I think women try, and I've had to give myself permission that I won't do it daily. I might not always do it weekly, but over the course of a month, I really intentionally kind of set out my calendar and block time and dinners and vacations, even if it's staycations with my boys, so they're making sure they're getting quality time with me as I kind of balance my time with them as a good mother and my time with my great team trying to be a great entrepreneur as well.
Well, I don't think there's any try in there. I think it's all do. And you mentioned, you know, superwoman. I mean, there's several like you, as many like you, in the franchise space. And I refer to all of you as superwomen. Dina, Catherine Bonson is going to be on the show in a few weeks. Susan Beth and many others as well. And I think this, you know, Women's Entrepreneurship Day tomorrow is just a tiny celebration for what you and many, many other women have done in business, and specifically as we talk about franchising. I think it's an exciting time with more and more women representing emerging brands, and I know Stan's seeing a lot of them down in Florida this week. As we look at that, there are a lot of things going on in the business world these days that have political ties to them, obviously. Most recently, the NLRB ruling of joint employer. And I know you have some opinion on that, and I would love for you to share some of that.
Yeah, sure. So maybe just one quick, you know, it is an amazing day tomorrow with celebrating women. And, you know, I loved what I'm seeing in terms of the women really supporting each other, and we're really trying to lift everyone up. I think that's how women should be, trying to help other women succeed. I mean, Dina is an amazing mentor to me, a good friend. I've been to visit her headquarters as I was kind of thinking about how would I find capacity to run my business and be chairwoman of the IFA, and Dina so graciously gave her time to kind of help me think through those choices and how to plan for that, you know, years in advance to make sure I had the bandwidth. And, you know, Catherine Munson, I think, is one of the smartest, most compassionate leaders I've ever seen. I've interacted with her and her franchisees and see how her franchisees respect her, know that she cares for them, and she's a dear friend that I'm honored to know and learn from and share with. And so there are just amazing women that are out there making an impact, but not only just in their businesses, but helping other women succeed and find balance and find success. And I think that's what's going to allow there to continue to be such exciting things for women in the franchising industry as we continue to bring up the ones that are emerging and continue to support one another. I think that's just so important that we really have women that have other women's backs. I think that really is a testament to leadership. It's not always the case, particularly in corporate America, to have women wanting to see other women succeed. But I'm finding that it's an amazing characteristic of the women leaders that I see and interact with and I'm privileged to be friends with in the franchising industry. So that, and then on the...
Shelley, okay. before you get on to NLRB, I do want to ask you a question. And it's strictly opinion, but it's one that I've been curious about with respect to women as entrepreneurs and leaders, because I greatly respect all the women leaders, especially in the franchise space. There's so much that can be learned. But, you know, the tide is changing. There's more and more women heading up companies. There are more and more women that are launching brands. At what point do we separate women from men in identifying it as a class? I mean, to me, I look at it and I look at you and I look at Catherine and I look at Dina and say, you guys are great franchise leaders. I look at some of the men that are out there and I say, you're great franchise leaders. And I try not to distinguish men from women, because to me, great leaders are great leaders. It doesn't matter, you know, what the gender is. When does that change? I mean, and I know that's off the cuff, and I'm just asking you for your opinion, but it's something I'm interested in.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a different approach in being a female leader in terms of culture and how we might interact with our employees and our franchisees that might be a little bit more touchy-feely. So I think for me, I don't get offended to be put into a, you know, category of a woman leader versus just a leader. At the end of the day, I kind of have to own I'm both. but I think it's important to recognize that there are going to be differences, and I think there's a celebration of those differences that I think we can learn from across both genders. I mean, I think there's something, I mean, if you looked at, you know, Fortune 1000, those that are women led, they outperform. And so I think there's something to kind of embrace and be almost, I'm almost more proud of the fact that I'm not just a leader, but I'm a female leader, because I think there's something that we bring to the table, particularly in my industry that's healthcare. I mean, we're taking care of moms and dads, grandmas and grandpas and children. The compassion that most women would bring, the nurturing and empathy that most women would bring naturally, I think it actually being a woman is a benefit in leading the brand that I lead and providing the services that I provide. So I don't really look at that as male, female. I think where the areas where I take a little bit more exception is where we're serving on boards or in volunteer leadership. And, you know, I was asked when I get to be chair, do I want to be referred to chair or as chairwoman of the IFA? I said, I just want to be referred to as chair. You don't mm-hmm. say chairman. You know, I just right. want to be chair. Because in that setting, there shouldn't be a difference in what I can do and the results I can help drive working with, you know, Robert Crisanti. That's just an amazing leader. I'm so happy to have him at the helm at IFA. You know, that for me, that's just about being chair, not a gender specific designation, but that's just me. And so I think I don't mind the designation of a great female leader outside as we're looking at kind of my role with BrightStar at all. I never even kind of think twice about that. But when I look at things that are outside of BrightStar where gender might not be a benefit, like I think it is in running a healthcare company, I just want to be a leader at the table and respected just like men would be and women would be equally.
Very well said, and I appreciate that. And I mean, my thought all along has been for a long time when it comes to especially franchising, you know, women in general have such a better feel for relationships and developing relationships and listening. And it's one of the reasons why I always thought female leaders have an edge up on their male counterparts. But again, that's my personal opinion. And to me, you know, a leader is a leader, but I hear what you say. I respect that. And I admire your position. Thank you. And I apologize for interrupting you as you're ready to go on to your thoughts on the NLRB role.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think the Browning Ferris case, I mean, is just, you know, one more example of how difficult it is for small businesses, in this case, particularly franchises, to deal with changing legislation and regulation, increased costs. And we, you know, you talked about in your opening as to, you know, it's the first time in our history, certainly in the last 10 to 15 years, where you have more businesses closing than opening on a net basis. Well, why is that? I mean, death by a thousand cuts. You've got, you know, the Obamacare and the increased costs of that. Regulations all over the place. Department of Labor looking at exempt, non-exempt, and trying to look at doubling that to where it would be cost prohibitive to have, you know, progression through management that actually harms the people it's intended to try to help, which is horrible. And then you have this overreach by a bureaucratic board trying to redefine the franchise model that's been so successful and has been, you know, the largest way that businesses have been starting and starting more successfully from a continuity rate over the last several decades. But again, it's death by a thousand cuts. And I think the horrible thing is that the Browning Ferris case wasn't even franchise specific, but now it's created all of this uncertainty as to might franchisors and franchisees be joint employers, and that hasn't been determined, but it's making all of the franchisors and franchisees uneasy about what might come and how do you prepare for something when there's no certainty. That almost makes it more difficult. And so there's a lot of efforts being done. There's a, you know, Senate Bill 2015 that was introduced by Senator Lamar Alexander, who was the senator from Tennessee, which is where I'm raised, and I actually have had the privilege to meet and speak to Lamar multiple times, is trying to prevent what the NLRB is trying to do, kind of, you know, off radar, trying to legislate against and protect the franchise business model that we all know is the best format for franchisees and franchisors. And we allow our franchisees are making all of their employment and labor decisions. We're not joint employers. There's nothing about this that should be joint employer. And it's really trying to increase union membership and collective bargaining is a reason why, you know, SEIU is putting in so much money to back these kind of efforts. And it's kind of multi-pronged. You've got, you know, Fight for 15. You've got discriminatory minimum wage that we're dealing with in Seattle. And one of my franchisees is actually a plaintiff on that case. But again, we're about being active and we want to change what's being done. Well, that means you have to be active and involved and engaged. And my franchisees are. I'm so proud of Kathy Lyons for stepping up and being on that case. And then you have joint employer from NLRB, and it's kind of looking at three prongs of trying to increase the number of people that are part of the unions. And making it easier if you could collective bargain with an entire brand versus one location at a time, you know why this is being done. I just hope we have a legislative ability to stop it or a change in the White House, which would change the composition of the NLRB so that we can protect small business, because this is all about unions, and it is all about harming small business and ultimately harming the employees that need these jobs, because jobs will cease to be created if we harm the franchise business model. That's really the model that's the only one that's working and creating net new jobs and net new businesses. The ones that aren't franchises are, you know, are closing more than they're opening.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. We're live on Franchise Today. My guest is Shelley Sun, co-founder and CEO at Brightstar. Of course, Franchise Today is brought to you by Franchise Foundry, a business accelerator focused on moving emerging franchise brands forward, and by FRM Solutions, providing robust, out-of-the-box software solutions tailored specifically to the needs of franchisors for the management of potential and existing franchise relationships. So, Shelley, you brought up about the SEIU pushing a lot of these efforts. And, of course, yesterday it was announced that the SEIU endorses Hillary Clinton and taking that firm position. What are your thoughts behind that?
Well, it wasn't surprising. and so I mean, nothing about that. I'm surprised it took so long, actually, for them to come out. I think they probably prefer some of the policies of Bernie Sanders, but I think they believe they need to back the nominee or the candidates that's likely to get the nomination, and that likely will be Hillary. So it had no surprise. They have a very strong agenda to increase their membership, and they're going to need presidential support to do that. I just hope that we're focusing the election on the economy and on the protection and safety of our country, particularly, as you mentioned in your opening, all the things that we've had happening just so tragically over the last week with terrorist attacks, you know, by ISIS. We've got to keep our country safe. We've got to look at economic policies. We're likely going to have to agree to disagree on some of the social things that have typically been a little polarizing from the Republican Party. But this election has to be about protecting small business, enabling economic growth, and protecting our country. And I hope that more people are getting educated about the candidates that are on the field and their position on those issues. I actually have taken a very active role in supporting Carly's Fiorina's campaign. I'll be one of her leadership team in the state of Illinois, and really active, and did a fundraiser for her last Monday. Have been at the last two debates in Milwaukee and in Boulder, Colorado, just to be really active and showing support for Carly, because I believe we have to be informed. If we want to change what's happening, we have to be active and engaged and change the paradigm. And that means getting out there and making sure they're the right candidates that can do the right things for our country economically and from a foreign policy perspective, get elected.
So a side note and a side question from Stan Friedman, who I said, you know, couldn't be here today because he's at the Emerging Brands Conference of the IFA down in Miami. But as we were preparing for the show the other day, he said, I want to ask Shelley a question. So I'll share that. Will the future be looking at a potential senator son?
No, I like the support from behind the scenes. I've had way too much fun in my adult life. So political office and that kind of investigation would not be something I'd put myself or my family through, but I like to support behind the scenes.
There you go, Stan. I asked the question. We're asking the hard question here on Franchise Today. Thank you. I'm sure you've been asked that before, though.
I have.
So shifting back to NLRB, the recent ABM forum on franchising, Richard Griffin, general counsel of the NLRB, and David Wall, administrator of the Wage and Hour Division, addressed the joint employer issue from the perspective of their respective agencies. Mr. Griffin appeared to have been surprised by the public outcry in the franchise community. I mean, I read that and I was just flabbergasted. Is he really surprised by the outcry? He felt was entirely unjustified, as in his view, franchising is not under attack by the NLRB. He stated that the Office of the General Counsel would follow the policy he articulated in its brief in the Browning Ferris, that franchises should remain exempt to the extent their indirect control over employee working conditions is related to their legitimate interest in protecting the quality of the product or brand. I mean, that just sounds like a bunch of blah, blah, blah to me, Shelley.
Me too.
I'm sorry. I mean, how could somebody, you know, look at this with any level of intelligence and be surprised by the public outcry of the franchise community? I mean, it's absurd. I understand. I mean, there have been issues, you know, outside this ruling, and especially, you know, with respect to McDonald's, and I'm referring to, you know, what occurred a couple of years ago in Massachusetts with Coverall, and obviously that's a the commercial cleaning industry has a little bit of a unique model, but you know, to refer to joint employership from the franchisor or franchisee level, I mean, not only is it going to create, you know, havoc within the franchisors themselves, trying to get their systems in order to make sure that they're not looked at that way, but it's starting to shed this, to cast this dark cloud over individuals looking at franchising, and misinterpreting, you know, what is actually going on. And my fear is that, you know, it's going to help the necessary franchise development efforts that have to take place, not only for franchisors to sustain, but to keep fueling the economy. I mean, where does it stop? I mean, how do we get past that component of it just by itself?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Michael Seid, who's, you know, a dear friend, one of the smartest people in franchising, you know, has written a few articles of kind of exactly this point is, you know, let's not maybe overreact to what's been done thus far. And until the McDonald's cases have been kind of ruled upon by the same kind of sitting board of the National Labor Relations Board that ruled on Browning Ferris, because we will harm the ability of franchise development to add new franchisees. And at the end of the day, you know, entrepreneurship is still, you know, a very powerful model, and it's still going to be more beneficial for first-time entrepreneurs to grow with a system. But I think we're adding a lot of complexity, a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of costs by where the NLRB has gone. I mean, we're already starting to spend money on new applicant tracking systems. So instead of trying to be beneficial to my franchisees and have one common site that we pay for and don't charge anything to our franchisees, to have applicants at any of our locations apply onto a central site, now I'm concerned about that might be too active in the hiring process of our franchisees. And so now we're shutting down the applicant tracking system, being a national site, and developing a partnership with Hireology. And Adam Robinson there has been a great partner in having the franchisees sign up with their own installation of an applicant tracking system that they host, they have access to, and they pay for, and we're not involved in it at all. That really didn't help my franchisees, but we're trying to address the risks and keep the business model moving in the right direction, but trying to moderate or lessen the risk that we feel like we might have. We're seeing insurance costs go up at the franchisee level and at the franchisor level for employment practices liability insurance. So it's already starting to affect the profitability of franchisees. So everything that they're doing is actually harming small business. You know, now I had to pass on costs for applicant tracking software. It's not much, but, you know, $40 to $100 a month. It's $40 to $100 a month for the franchisees. But I don't have a choice to pay for it for them, or it could look like I'm paying for something that's enabling their hiring process,
right,
which would be, you know, if under increased scrutiny. Now their insurance costs are going up. Our insurance costs are going up. That means that I might have less in support because I'm having to spend more in insurance to offset that. I can't help my franchisees answer questions on employment decisions, and it's still ultimately their decision, but they might have called a year ago and asked for input or advice that they ultimately will make the decision for. Now we're completely hands-off on any of those conversations. Everything NLRB is doing is requiring to mitigate risk. Franchisors actually having to deliver less services that would have been beneficial to franchisees to be more profitable, more successful, create more jobs, and instead we're going the other direction, which I find to be just completely unfortunate and just, you know, head-scratching as to we should be doing everything to help businesses start, help businesses sustain, and instead, death by a thousand cuts, we're doing everything to help to require businesses to have more hoops to jump through, have increased costs, and have more uncertainty at the franchisor and franchisee level.
It seems everything is going through this big caution filter because of it, and I think that is resonating throughout government today. Griffin also pointed to Freshies, a franchise brand's advice memorandum, as an example of a conventional franchise relationship that exceed the levels of control necessary for the protection of the quality of the product or brand. In contrast, a so-called hypothetical franchisor, and of course, no one was under any illusion that that was a reference to anybody but McDonald's, one that exercised excessive control through real estate ownership of franchise premises and driving down franchisee labor costs by requiring franchisees to use and enforcing their use of labor-saving software, crossed over the line to become a joint employer with its franchisees. Griffin likened the NLRB's view of the new joint employer doctrine in franchising to the doctrine of piercing the veil in a corporate setting. The separateness of the corporate entity should generally be respected unless unusual circumstances occur that justify piercing the veil. If you've ever seen the movie The Best Little Whorehouse of Texas, when the Texas state governor at that time in the real experience of that movie depicts, you know, the governor at that time just basically double talked, and it sounds to me like that's exactly a lot of double talk, especially when he says, unless unusual circumstances occur that justify piercing the veil. I mean, what does that mean? I got to get off my soapbox here.
It means we now have a lot of uncertainty that we shouldn't have, and uncertainty causes businesses not to want to invest in growing their brands, adding more jobs, adding more locations, and that's bad for franchisees and franchisors, and ultimately it's bad for workers and the economy that we're trying to jumpstart. And I think it's these kind of policies overreach that are helping the unions is really why we have such an anemic recovery, and one of the most anemic recoveries we've had following a recession ever. And it's bad policy. It's not understanding the basic economics of we need to make sure we're making things easier for business, not harder. And if we are adding this much legislation, this much regulation, and this much uncertainty from lack of clear, concrete rules that favor small business and business job and economic growth, you're getting the output of that, which is more businesses are closing than opening. Kind of no surprise. And we've got to get leaders in Washington that are going to be about creating an environment that is predictable and is less complex and less costly, so we can get the country started again.
So with that in mind, what are your thoughts on the $15 an hour minimum wage?
I think it's too much. I think most businesses couldn't have a 40 to 100% increase in their labor costs, particularly in a quick period of time. I think market forces determine what wages should be. Is there opportunity on a market-by-market basis to move up some? Yes. Moving up above $10 per hour probably isn't feasible. I mean, you still need a starting wage, and the problem with a $15 minimum wage is if employers that pay $15 now are probably getting a college graduate or at least a vocational school graduate, now all the people that are unskilled are not going to be able to get those $15 jobs. You also are going to have more employers looking at, right now, they look at what's my cost for an employee versus my cost to invest millions of dollars into technology to automate certain positions. If the minimum wage goes, you know, up to $15, there are more and more and more jobs that will be automated through technology, and then you increase your unemployment drastically. And again, not understanding economics, all the people you were supposedly trying to help, you actually harmed, much like Obamacare all over again. We make decisions and we make policy to say we're trying to help improve the lives of people who need that help from the government, and yet it does everything to hurt the people it's intending to help and hurt small business that's just trying to survive and to create new jobs. And, you know, this is just one more example of that. Is there some room? Absolutely. But I believe that, you know, as businesses are growing, we have to be competitive on wages, and we need to have resources to be able to invest in workers, to be able to move them in my business from a caregiver to a certified nursing assistant to a licensed practical nurse to a registered nurse. The only way that I have the resources at the franchisee level, or franchisees have the resources to invest in continuing education for workers to do that, is that they are utilizing, instead of $15 minimum wage, they're utilizing lower wages, but they're increasing the wages as the workers become more skilled. Having government say you have to pay an unskilled worker $15, well, I'm not going to pay an unskilled worker $15. I'm going to pay a skilled worker $15. And all of the unskilled labor, their jobs get replaced by technology or their jobs get replaced by college grads. And that's horrible for the economy that nobody's thinking about.
It is, and it's already taking place. I mean, just this week, on November 11th, we saw an article. McDonald's announces its answer to the $15 an hour minimum wage, which are touchscreen cashiers. I mean, fast food chains were never meant to be a place for someone to raise a family of six. They were to be part-time positions with some full-time advancements. And as we know, most of the fast food restaurants were, those jobs which were school-age kids, to learn how to interact with people, you know, with a job, to offer spending money, to begin responsibility of learning for their future, and the part-time position is not intended to pay for a house. It was more a stepping stone. So not only the people that are currently working at McDonald's and other places that'll be replaced by technology, but it just closes the door even further for our young that see an unemployment rate growing at a very high rate that's not being looked at and viewed as part of the unemployment statistics that come out every month.
Yeah.
It's a tough time. I mean, it's a tough time, but, you know, the brands will survive. McDonald's has plans for at least 2,000 locations to have these minimum wage touchscreen cashiers. And I've seen a picture of it at one location. You literally walk up to this semicircular counter and it's got, you know, five or six touchscreens right there. I mean, just those are jobs. They're gone. I know myself, I was in a Buffalo Wild Wings at one of the airports, I think Atlanta. I sat down, didn't see hardly any, you know, people with Buffalo Wild Wings shirts on. There was a little iPad on the table. I placed my order, for my drink and my meal. It got to me very, very quickly. Somebody dropped it off, politely asked if there was anything else. I said no. She said, when you're finished with your meal, you can click right there on the screen for the cashier, which I did. And I paid my bill. It even asked me for an upsell. It asked me if I wanted a bottle of water, which is great. It provided me a chance to buy a bottle of water for my flight instead of having to go to one of the convenience stores or kiosks. And my interaction with a live person was no more than 40 seconds. Tell me how that's not going to resonate in a loss of jobs.
Absolutely. And they've been doing it in Europe, right? I mean, the last few times I've been to Europe, the McDonald's kiosks, instead of people, has been in practice there. And you look at what their labor laws are, their cost of labor, their unemployment rules for separation, you know, having to pay 6 months, 12 months if you have separation, the kind of equivalent of minimum wages there. We're becoming Europe. And if you could look at the success of using technology to replace jobs, it's been going on in Europe for several years. It's just now, since we're becoming Europe in our policies, we're going to become Europe in our replacement of jobs through technology use. And that's not the direction we want to be going. And it's never what's been special about America. But unfortunately, bad policy creates bad outcomes.
Mm-hmm. It does. Shelley, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to be a guest again on Franchise Today. And we wish you the best of luck for you personally and for your brand moving forward. Thank you again.
Thanks, Paul. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Thanks. So we're closing in on the Thanksgiving holiday. No more franchise events, I think, for the foreseeable future. So Stan will be back with me. And we'll be back 2 weeks from today live. Next week, we will have a rebroadcast of one of the more popular shows on Franchise Today. Looking ahead to, I look ahead, I do want to thank last week's guest, Michael Stone, founder of the Professional Athletes Franchise Initiative. It was really a very eye-opening conversation. Really liked the idea that Stan and Michael had with respect to partnering up veterans and athletes and really having a combination of operational and financial strengths together, kind of like what we were discussing earlier today with millennials and baby boomers and seniors, you know, partnering up. And I think this is what it's going to be for the future moving forward. So again, thank you, Michael, for returning as our guest on Franchise Today. And as I was going to say, you know, as we're moving forward, we really have an exciting year ahead on Franchise Today, and we'll be sharing some of those details as we enter our seventh year on the air. And it's really a pleasure to be on the air with you. My hat's off to everybody that's been involved in Franchise Today, all the guests, and there's been hundreds of them over the years that have dedicated their time and in promoting the show and being on the show and recommending guests for the show. It's really a pleasure. We're closing in on 200,000 on-demand listens. And, of course, you could listen to all shows of Franchise Today on iTunes. Just look for Franchise Today. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.